Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Nerd Speak. I'm Adam Kaufman, joined by Jay Patel, as always. Today is our Q&A midweek episode. We asked on Twitter, you responded. Some questions really in-depth, some not so much. One of those very in-depth questions was from Diego, works at Diamond Digest, who just said life with a question mark.
Heavy hitter.
And for sure, man, absolutely.
It's, yeah, I really gotta think about that one, but...
Yeah. But that,
yeah, I mean, think so.
I'm pro.
Yes.
I'm pro life.
I prefer.
Why not? Wait, no.
Not like that.
I'm pro being alive.
That sounds better. Yeah. he almost got us.
Moving on. Sean asked how much wood could Woodchuck chuck if Woodchuck could chuck wood.
Dude, we need analytics on woodchucks.
Yeah, do they have them? Is there a like Fangraphs for woodchucks? Like
this might be like by the time I'm in college, right? If like no one's done this yet, like my senior project, I think I might just do this.
Woodchuck project. Yeah, I mean like are we talking about like totals or rate? Like is this a
it's gotta be
how rate. Is it chucks per day?
Wait, I'd go like woodchucks over expected, maybe. Like I think that could happen.
Chuck some wood over expected. I mean, if you're an elite woodchuck, you know, you can probably chuck somewhere like, you know, 300 chucks of wood per day.
That sounds like a lot of woodchucking.
But a woodchuck could chuck that
amount of wood.
We're talking about the Mike Trout of woodchucks over here.
Yeah.
Like this is an elite woodchuck. The average woodchuck probably somewhere around, I don't know,
100, 150.
Yeah, that's probably where they'd sit. Now, yeah. If you're going on the other end, and you know, Alfred Payton of woodchucks, if you will, that's gonna sit around the 50s, 40s, where it's just lazy at this point. They're just gonna chuck and take a big break and chuck again, and turn over
some wood.
They'll just be. They're just gonna be overpaid. That's just not what you pay guys to do. I mean, yeah. If a woodchuck is not chucking at least 500, how much wood could woodchuck chuck for woodchuck? If woodchuck is not chucking at least 500, I know, at least 200 chucks of wood per day, I don't want them. I don't want them on my team. Just come on.
Yeah, no. It's like, you know, the good thing about woodchucks too, it's like they have one dimension. Just how much wood can you chuck? You don't have to worry about like other factors.
Yeah, it's very quantitative.
Exactly.
It's like there's one goal. It's chuck the wood. And if they don't chuck the wood, they're not good at it. And if they're good at chucking the wood, then they are good. It's easy to count. The analytics really should be pretty easy here. Obviously, you have to account for teeth size when chucking wood, hand size, how much wood can they hold in their hands. You know, Josh Allen would be a hell of a wood chucker. Guy's got big hands. He could hold a lot of wood in his hands and then chuck it. All right.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah, it's really in depth. Next one from Peyton. How many podcasts do I plan to run by the time I turn 30? I'd say a minimum of 73. That's always been my dream. Has always been to run exactly 73 podcasts.
Oh, okay. Any reason you like 73 or just like?
Yeah, just 73 podcasts seems like a good number.
That's fair.
All right. Now we actually get into the boring questions. Your go-to advanced stats and favorite stat website across the major sport from Kunal. I mean, that's no woodchuck question. But all right.
You want to go sport by sport?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Across the four major North American sports, because I know
you want to get hockey out of the way because that's all you.
Yeah, hockey. There's a bunch. I subscribe to Evolving Hockey. They are very, very good. Let me try and find the other. But Hockey Graphs, which Asma Tumi, who we just had on, that's a great site. Micah Blake McCurdy, I follow him on Twitter. He runs, I think, Hockey Viz, and that's a really good site. And there's one other guy that I cannot think of right now, but I'm blanking on. But there's a good amount of good sites. They're all very similar. You know, they all. I mean, the Athletic, Dom Lucician has a lot of great stuff. Dom Lucician's a guy that I would very, I would recommend if you're trying to get into hockey analytics, you look at. Also, Steve Alliquette works for the, he works for the Rangers. He's on MSG, but he has a lot of really cool just stuff explaining different stats on his Twitter. And I would like recommend those. And I assume you don't have any recommendations for hockey. I
do not.
All right, then going over to basketball. I can't really think of too many basketball sites. The one that I used for earlier in this year, let me try to find the art graph. Do you know any basketball?
Yeah. So I think one of the main ones, right, everyone uses, just go to Basketball Reference. You see True Shooting there, right? Much more better way of analyzing like how efficient a player is. Then if you want like impact metrics, I like B-ball index. Their new metric they came out with this year, LeBron, I think it's called. They do a good job separating that into, you know, like an offensive, a defensive, and like a total aspect. I like 538's Raptor War too. That's pretty decent. But like basketball is weird because you can't rely on advanced stats in basketball. Like, you need to watch it too. And I know, like, eye test, whatever, right? But, like, there's so much in basketball, like, advanced stats can't capture yet that, yeah. Or at least to the public, right? Because, like, NBA teams definitely have tracking data. They're definitely using that. But from, like, a fan standpoint, we just get, like, you know, maybe some play-by-play data. But, like, on websites, you get, like, impact metrics, efficiency metrics, maybe, like, on and off too. There's one website, it's called a. Just pbpstats.com, and you can create like splits of like different rosters and stuff to see like the on and offs of different players, assist percentages, stuff like that. But other than that, for basketball, it's a combination. You definitely have to watch it too.
The I made an art graph just about offensive and defensive efficiencies a couple months ago. That I used NBA Stuffer for that.
That's a good one.
I would agree. I think out of the four major sports, you're probably the most behind on analytics in basketball. It's just so much harder to quantify so many different things. The true shooting percentage is it's not that advanced, but it's still a very good stat to use. It's just a base. True shooting percentage is honestly kind of just like on base percentage and field goal percentage is like batting average, where it's just like.
Yeah.
It's just a little thing where, like, you know, you're just taking into account where you're shooting from, basically.
Right.
But it makes a huge difference. It's something that very much should be kind of talked about. Someone who shoots a lot of threes.
Yeah.
That a three is harder than a normal shot, so it should count differently.
Yeah.
But basketball is definitely the toughest one to try to find a, you know, really advanced – just – it's just kind of behind. You know, your teams are trying. Raptor War is obviously something that they're trying to be able to create this, but there's so many things like that just unaccounted for because there's no player tracking data and like, you know, cuts to the hoop, screens, stuff like that. It's not something that's really counted.
I think our last episode we talked about it too, but like baseball's like discrete events, right? Where it's like, oh, stop and like go, stop and go. Basketball's like continuously flowing, like with new things going on. Like each play can have like so many different factors affecting it. It's really hard to quantify right now.
Yeah, baseball is easily the easiest to quantify, which is why they're so advanced analytically, because it's literally pitcher has the ball, hitter's at the plate. That's it. The only goal, fielding metrics are still behind because, again, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like ground ball to the third baseman. There's no one else doing anything. Right. It's the third baseman's job to make the play. It's not like, you know, someone's going to set a screen on the third baseman and he's not going to be able to get to the ball or something like that. Like it's just it's an odd thing. But, baseball is it's easy to see why baseball, when you watch baseball, why it's so advanced.
Side note, I don't know if you saw it. Did you see FIFA? They were talking about replacing their, point differential to use as a tiebreaker with expected goal differential.
Really?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's really cool. I don't know as much about
I don't know
analytics in soccer, but I'm assuming that their expected goal differential is very similar to the hockey one, where there's basically, you know, based on where you take the shot, based on defenders and all this good stuff. Like, you know, the expected goals. So yeah, that is better than plus minus, because it expected goals genuinely give a better idea of who was the better team. It's not just who scored, it's who created the most chances. And you know, obviously finishing is a big part of sports. You have to score to get points and you have to score to win, but as a tiebreaker, I have no issue with that.
Right.
Football.
So football.
Yeah, football, and then we didn't do baseball yet. But football, I think it's what's it called? NFL Data R? Is that what his website's called? No.
FastR.
FastR.
That's weird though, because for like a casual fan, right, you don't know R. So if you actually wanna, like, as a casual fan or like someone who doesn't know how to code it themselves, you can use a RB
SDM.
SDM, yeah. RBSDM.
That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah. That's what I thought the entire website was called.
Oh, okay.
So
you can get a lot of QB stats on there. CPOE, which is completion percentage over expected. EPA per play, which is just, you know, like how much value a player is adding on a play. I forget who it was. Someone made like these NFL. I think the guy's name is Tucker Boynton. He made these NFL quarterback cards. I'll find the link and put it down later. But basically, you can see like a quarterback's EPA by direction, by pass length. You get like a rolling average and a couple other things that go into it, like average depth of target, which is cool. That all helps. And then, yeah, but as like someone who doesn't know how to code, I'd say like Pro Football Reference, especially free. Because you can't get PFF, right, without a subscription.
Yeah.
Pro Football Reference is good. You can get, like, average depth of target. Next Gen Stats, too. You get, like, time to throw, a separation metrics, rushing yards over expected, which they implemented from last year's Big Data Bowl. So I think, yeah, Next Gen Stats, RBSDM, and Pro Football Reference would be, like, my main three websites for getting into football analytics.
And PFF if you...
Yeah, like, if you have a subscription.
If you want to subscribe. Or, like, I mean, I just use PFF when Giants are interested in a player. I just want to see what they think about him. Yeah. Obviously, you know, it's, again, football stats. I feel like football stats for quarterbacks are pretty solid at this point. They're not perfect, but they're very solid. But, like, for corners and defensive backs, football, it's still very... It's hard to quantify that stuff, and...
Football is the one stat where I think like teams are way ahead of like the public, like actually.
Yeah.
Because we know like they have player tracking data and they're using it, but like they don't make that available to the public, obviously.
Yeah, and that's something that asked me. She mentioned that the hockey player tracking data is going to make a difference, but it's not this massive difference. But in football, if you think about what I mean, if you look at just where everyone moved on a play, everyone's moving.
Yeah.
Literally every single person on that field is moving, and it's not enough to watch the game because you're not seeing what the, you know, cornerback closest to the camera did to avoid that pass being thrown to him. And, you know, he doesn't get any points on that. There's no target. There's no pass swatted, but he avoided a pass on his side, which seems like it should be a good thing. Like, you know, unless... You know, so like, was the quarterback avoiding him, or was he just not seeing him? That's why it's always tough to in the PFF, it's tough to, you know, do cornerback because the biggest problem with PFF is just that it's hard, especially defensively, for them to figure out what this individual impact was, not including the pass rush. You know, a pass rush comes really quickly, guys to get rid of it, underthrows the ball, a guy picks it. You're gonna have the quarterback, the corner who made the pick, a very good grade on that, even though maybe it wasn't his play.
Yeah,
maybe it was because the pass rush was so efficient. So it's always tough to
I know PFF, they've been working on this actually, where they started grading cornerbacks on plays they aren't targeted to, because like right now they're only getting graded on plays that they're targeted. But obviously, right, there's like a lot more to that. Like a corner can still have really bad coverage and, you know, like a player gets by him or whatever and they're not getting graded on that play. PFF, Pro Football Reference. That Pro Football Reference actually has a lot. They have like an annual value type stat too, which is pretty interesting. I mean, like, I wouldn't really use it because it's not meant to be like a wins over replacement type metric. But if you want to get like a general baseline of like how good a player was compared to like other players, that could help in that season though specifically. And then yeah, RB, SDM, and a lot of like these people working with NFL Fast Start have made like shiny apps where you can get like specific things that they've worked on, which, yeah, I guess all in all, that's basically football. Oh, next gen stats too. Yeah.
Yeah. Baseball, I think, is above and beyond the other.
Way beyond, yeah.
I mean, if you want quote unquote basic stats, you know, FanCraft and Baseball Reference have extremely advanced stats. And,
yeah.
You know, they are. I mean, some of these stats are amazing. I mean, WOBO, Weighted Runs Created Plus, they are fantastic stats. I mean, I think Weighted Runs Created Plus is far and away the best stat to judge a hitter. If you're just in terms, if I'm only judging offense, that's is Weighted Runs Created Plus and then how many games he played just to get a sample size. That's basically all I would need. There's really nothing. It's just so encompassing. Although it can be iffy with a course. Yeah. But then Baseball Savant is like, Baseball Savant's my favorite website. It's a bit more advanced than the other two.
Yeah.
But I think that it's fantastic.
I really like what they do with like expected stats.
It's the best stats. Predictive stat.
Yeah.
Best predictive
also,
site.
Yeah. They've added like a lot of like spin stuff, spin direction, spin efficiency, arm angles you're throwing from. That all really helps. They even like created like a run, or they not created. I don't know if they took it from someone, but they started implementing like a run value metric on like each pitcher's pitches, which I think is really cool. You got like almost like a wins above replacement for like a specific pitch, which is pretty neat. I like that. Alex Chamberlain has a good Tableau page too. He's done a lot of work there. Connor Kirkon's PCRA does a good job.
Rotation, right?
Yeah, six-man rotation. That does a good job of just, like, isolating barrels and strikeout rates. But, yeah, I think baseball is at the point where I think most people listening to this, like, know what stats they want to use for baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really have to, like, tell you much there.
And even if you don't yet, and you just want to kind of get into it, I think FanGraphs is the place to get into things because they have a great glossary.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea what was happening when I first, like, went on those sites. And I just went on their glossary and clicked on a bunch of stats that I wanted to know. And some of them, like, you know, if you click on the WAR or the SIERA glossary, you're going to leave it confused because they're just very advanced stats. But, you know, FIP, WOBA, Weighted Runs Created Plus, like, they give you the equation and you're like, oh,
yeah,
okay. Like that makes a lot of sense. Like, okay, right. I see why that's it. And then it makes it just so much easier to understand. It's been charging, not charging. But moving on to, that's the end of that question. Never mind. So Jeremy asked the top five smartest organizations in the NFL. I think we both agree on number one. That's Baltimore. Cleveland. Oh, really?
I like Cleveland over Baltimore at this point.
Okay,
that's fair. Just because, like, I don't know, Baltimore is weird to me because they've done a really good job building that team, right? They don't give out big contracts like players they think will regress and stuff.
The favorite thing that they do is they like always sign guys who got cut, and it's such a basic thing, and it is so smart because you just get so many comp picks, and like it's very smart.
The thing that's like preventing me from putting them, I think, above Cleveland is just because they're ignoring their wide receiver position for so long. I get drafting Marquise Brown in the first, you may be waiting on him, but you really can't go into, I think this Lamar is like third year now, right?
Yeah.
Fourth
year. No, fourth year.
I don't see how you can go into like his fourth year with like his wide receiver two being Sammy Watkins.
And especially someone like Lamar. Yeah. Where, like, you know, he needs
a
number one. You give him a guy like, they're not going to be able to get him, but a guy like Jalen Waddle would do wonders for him.
Yeah. So I like Cleveland over them because they've done a really good job. They build that secondary. They signed, like, signing Johnson this year as a safety was, like, amazing value.
That was ridiculous.
They prioritize the pass game over, you know, the run game. And, like, they still have good, like, O-line, D-line, too. It's not like it's bad. Like, they got Wyatt Tiller, who was, like, a cut from, like, the Bills. Like, he was, like, a sixth-round pick or something. He turned into, like, an all-pro guard. Yeah, so I think the Browns are my number one. And then, like, under the Browns, I think I have a tier with, like, the Bills, Baltimore, and Tampa.
Yeah. Yeah. Ever since Tampa drafted I forget his last name, but the kicker in the second round, they've been doing really
good. Aguero, I think his name was.
Yeah,
or Aguayo.
Yeah, Aguayo.
Yeah.
Robert Aguayo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something. Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree with the Bills. Yeah, I think those are my top four teams. I don't know the exact order I put them in. I do think I'd have Baltimore at the top. Yeah. I like what they've done with their offensive line. And I'm very big that you need some sort of offensive line. And the Browns do have that. But like that is what that's why I really want the Giants to go offensive line 11. I just think that you a great skill positions will only do so much if your quarterback can't let guys get more than 10 yards down the field because he's getting hit. But I do I love what I think the Bills have built their team so well. It's basically you can tell who the smartest organizations are by who has prioritized the pass, and who has invested resources at the inside defensive line or running back position. Like, the Raiders are not a smart organization. The Panthers are not a smart organization. Like, the Giants are not a smart organization. Like, these teams that, it's obvious that they never take something for granted. I think the Chiefs are a pretty smart organization. I think that the Clyde Edwards-Helaire pick was just horrible.
Yeah.
And just one of those picks where it's like, it was just kind of like come on, like you know that you don't have to be doing this, it was too much of a luxury pick.
Yeah.
Where they thought like, okay, we don't have any more holes, and then all of a sudden they lost Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz in the span of one offseason, and then before that, Patrick Mahomes was running for his life in the Super Bowl. So it's like, the draft is for depth, and they didn't need another running back, especially with Damian Williams. Well, he did opt out.
Yeah. So that's my top four. I like Tampa. See, the thing with two out of the four teams, though, they kind of lucked into a quarterback. Like Tampa, Brady coming there, right? Like, and especially he signs for cheap. He doesn't take a max contract. He 2 years, 50 or whatever. So I think that definitely luck definitely plays a factor into determining how good your front office is. Like the Bills, Josh Allen, everyone thought he was the worst quarterback in existence his first 2 years. But they invested in him, and I think that definitely helps. Then I think my tier under, I have Kansas City there. I think the Chargers are there. They've always been one to invest in their secondary, right? They've spent on wide receivers. Mike Williams hasn't panned out necessarily, but they're building around Herbert too with the O-line. I like what they've done. Pittsburgh, I think, was there, but after this offseason, I don't really know what to think of them because they kind of lost a lot of their O-line. Their secondary is not the same at all, and Big Ben's still there.
Yeah, they had a bad offseason.
Yeah, and then I think my last team I maybe include up there, I don't know if this is bold or something, but Denver, they've done a really good job building around Drew Lock. But, Drew Lock's just really bad.
Yeah, I think they had a great offseason. I think they were one of the teams that had the best offseason. But, I think a big marker of a great organization is knowing when to move on from a quarterback.
Yeah.
And maybe they aren't. Maybe the only reason that they're not being linked to quarterbacks that much is because they just don't really – they're not in a position to draft a good quarterback in this draft because they're at 9. And, probably if any of the top five quarterbacks fall to 8, Carolina's going to scoop them up.
Right.
But, I just think that you need to know when. And, maybe Drew Lock, maybe they want to give him that third year, the Giants trying to give Daniel Jones, where it's just put him in the best position possible and make him prove it. But I do think that, if after this year, you can give him the next year, but if he sucks again, then it's you have to be okay, we're done.
I think
trade up.
Yeah. That plus there's a certain level I think you reach when you can tell a quarterback's just not good. And, like, I think Drew Lock's there. But, like, to Denver's credit, they've done a really good job, like, giving him what he needs to be a good quarterback, right? They've invested a wide receiver. They got Courtland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy in the first, KJ Hamler in the third, I liked. They're both going to bounce back from drop issues last year. They signed Noah Fant, or not signed, they drafted Noah Fant. They have weapons. They have a good secondary, right? Justin Simmons there, good corners. And edge rush, obviously, they have Bradley Chubb, Von Miller there. I have no idea if Miller's going to play this year because, like, yeah, that whole, like, you know, police thing going on. Yeah.
Yeah, but, I don't know. I mean, I think that Denver has one of the best rosters in the league. If you're just really looking at, just if you're just looking at the roster, it's just the quarterback obviously brings down your roster. Yeah. Maybe Locke can take a big, maybe you can take a big step. You never know.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But I think the other organization that I think the last couple of years they've kind of left this a bit, but the Pats. Like, they were, you know, they had, I mean, there's a reason for their years of glory, and obviously Brady has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they didn't have a good, they did not have a good year this year with Cam. And it looks like they're going to run it back with Cam. But I do think that I think the Pats are probably the most revolutionary franchise, but then I think other teams just kind of passed them. But just kind of in, just the basic idea of just not fitting square pegs in the round holes. Like, just build, and that's what, and honestly, that's why I think the Giants are on the way up, because that's what Judge has also come around with, that you don't get players to fit a scheme, you get a scheme to fit the players.
Yeah.
And you can change your scheme every year based on the talent around you. And I mean, again, this is about the Giants, but, like, that's something Patrick Graham did, like, in the first couple games of the year. First couple games of the year, they were playing a lot of man, and then Patrick Graham realized he has Isaac E. Adam, so he has to completely change his scheme, and they did, and it worked. It worked well. So I do think that that's something they're drafting the past couple of years with the Pats has been really bad. It either hasn't worked out, or, you know, something like, you know, taking Sonny Michel in the first round, who's a great runner, but
there's
not a value move.
Yeah. I think my thing with the Patriots, I think people overblow their drafting issues. Because my thing is, right, they drafted Isaiah Wynn, who's, like, a really good offensive tackle in the first round. They got that offensive guard from Michigan, Michael Onwenu, I think his name is. They got him in, like, the fifth round, and he was, like, an all-pro his rookie year. So I get, like, obviously they haven't had good drafts, right? They've, like, missed on those two tight end picks. They drafted Michelle, like you said. But at the same time, I don't think it's been, like, so bad to the point where, like, we're all saying, like, Bill Belichick has no idea what he's doing. I don't think that's fair. I think they're still – they're probably, like, top 15 front office for me right now.
I don't think Belichick doesn't know what he's doing. I would trust him. Like up until this year, I feel like and you know, maybe it works out, but – usually teams that go on giant free agent spending sprees are not the ones that win championships. Usually happens. And the Pats avoided that, like, for the past 20 years.
Yeah.
But they never did it. And then this year, I think this year was kind of like, time to go all in, because I think Belichick is nearing retirement. Yeah. And I think he wants another championship before he retires. So I think that was more so what this year was. And obviously they're going to need a quarterback if they're going to do that.
But I think he just realized he had a bad roster too. Like,
yeah,
the team isn't good. Like,
yeah,
it's that simple.
You know, it's like if you're I don't know how old he is, but he's, like, in his 70s, right?
Has to be, yeah.
So, like, if you're an older GM who wants to win another championship, and it's not like we're talking about Dave Gettleman, like, but Bill Belichick, we know can win championships, and the dude, and he's earned the right to. He's 68, so, like, he'll be 69 in a couple of days. So, you know, you look at your roster, and like you said, it's a bad roster. And the way to build great rosters is through the draft. But that's going to take a few years.
Yeah.
You know, they're not building a great roster in one draft. And, you know, he doesn't want us to be here for another 10 years, three losing seasons. He's going to get fired eventually, or he's going to just quit. He's not going to get fired. He'll never get fired, but he'll quit.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay, our floor right now is like a 3-win team. I need to push this way up. And that's what the free agency made their team a lot better. I mean, they made some pretty. I don't love all the contracts they made. I don't like the Judon contract.
In terms of just, like, straight players, compared to what they had last year, it's way better.
It's like, a huge increase. So they're a much better team now. And all of a sudden, maybe their floor is like an 8-win team, depending on quarterback play. And then if they're able to maybe trade up for a quarterback, which, again, goes against the Belichick mantra, that was a smart – the trading down and not splurging in free agency are two things that I think great organizations do. And now the Pats are going to maybe trade up and splurge, but it's because that's what – when you're in win-now mode – those are what you kind of feel like you have to do. Yeah. And maybe.
Oh.
What were you saying?
Yeah. Also, he completely missed on N'Keal Harry too. That was.
That was a really bad. Pick. Yeah. Yeah.
They're probably like top 15-ish right now. I guess. Yeah. I guess like a couple other ones that are up there. San Francisco. I think. Miami is probably up there. Although that second trade they made with trading back up to 6, I don't like at all.
I don't like it. It's just kind of like, it's one of those trades where I was like they can do it.
Yeah.
they shouldn't have done it, but it's almost they're going to be fine. Like they have so many assets. It's just like, I don't even know. Do we even know what pick they traded up with? Was it their first round pick next year?
Yeah, I think it was theirs.
It's a lot of conflicts and Yeah, and again, you know, and I think that they're handling it well, not moving on from Tua yet. You know, I don't think Tua is going to be a great quarterback. I'm not very sold on him. But, you know, you give him a year, and again, you put these guys in positions to succeed, and you see what happens. If he sucks, then you move on next year with your, like, 15 first-round picks and trade up.
Yeah, I think San Francisco's up there. I think Dallas is up there. New Orleans, just because, like, the stuff they do with the cap. And that one draft they had, like, the Marcus Williams class, that was insane. Maybe, like, my last team, Indy, I guess. Like, they're top 12-ish. Although, Ballard seems kind of content with, like, 10, 11-win seasons. And, like, that being the ceiling. So, I don't know. It kind of ticks me off there. But,
I do think Ballard is low, like one of the I don't know if it's an organizational thing, but Ballard's one of those guys that I would very much like. I think he's one of the best GMs in the league.
Yeah, he's really good, but like he just has that hesitancy to go get a good quarterback.
Obviously he got when Luck retired a couple weeks before season, that obviously
wasn't on him. But he had an interview where he was talking about, like, someone asked him, like, would you ever trade up for a quarterback, right? And he's like, no, I like where we are. I think keeping your assets is better. And their roster is right there. Like, they just need that quarterback.
Yeah, they're in that position. They are in a position to trade up for a quarterback.
A
quarterback.
Especially after that trade down with the Jets they had a lot of capital. Like, you had an opportunity to go get a quarterback. So, they're up there. I think so. We agree, like, the top teams, Cleveland, Buffalo, Baltimore, Tampa, Kansas.
Yeah, somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a good question.
Indeed.
Let me find the other question. I just went away from it. All right. Top 10 point guards in the NBA coming from Cam Levy. All right. He said kind of hard to say exactly where point guard is, but no, we're playing a lineup, so no LeBron or Harden.
Okay. I'm going to use tiers like he did. I think that's the best way to actually rank players. I think my tier one is just Steph.
Oh, Steph. I said Alfred Payton, but, you know, like, I guess you can, you know, go with Steph if you want.
Seriously, I think Steph is just in a tier alone by himself.
I agree.
Yeah, the work he's done with that Golden State roster sucks.
Yeah, he's a freak. He's just he's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, so I think he's my one. I think tier two for me would be Luka and Dame. Yeah. I like what Luka's done a lot with that Dallas roster, especially after trading Seth Curry. That kind of annoyed me because Seth was like a good fit there, and they got Josh Richardson, who's like, I think, marginally worse than him. And Dame, you know, he's Dame. He's like really good in the regular season. Playoffs, they never seem to put it together, but I think that would be so my tier one and tier two.
Well, so your tier two was Luka and Dame?
Yeah, I think so.
I agree with Luka and Dame in that tier. I'd also put Kyrie there.
That's fair, actually.
I think Kyrie is just absolutely ridiculous. I think he's a guy. He's a weird dude, obviously. Like, you're not really when he just left the team earlier in the year. But it's worth it because that's a guy that could win you a championship.
Yeah. That's fair. I guess just this year, I don't know. It's kind of weird to evaluate him because, first, he has an insane team around him in Brooklyn. So you don't know, how much of that's himself. Although,
it was all of him, right?
That's fair, yeah. I think he's in my tier right under that. Probably with – that would be, I think Kyrie, CP3. Yeah, Kyrie, CP3, Simmons, I think, right? And I don't know if Kyle Lowry goes there.
I wouldn't put Lowry with them. I like those. I put Kyrie in tier, but I like CP3 and Simmons in the next tier.
Yeah.
I think that they are just like they are what a point guard kind of needs.
They're really good point guards.
They are great distributors, great defenders, and in the end, if that's your point guard, you're fine with that. Yeah. They can both also score, but I don't know if I'd put Kyle Lowry in that tier. I love Lowry, so I think I put Lowry in that tier below. But yeah. I just don't. I don't think that he is as elite at either. I think he's great at both of those things. But I think the two, Simmons and CP3, I think are the two best defending and two best passing point guards in the league.
Yeah, that's fair. So I think all right. So. Yeah, and then so CP3, for me at least, CP3, Kyrie, and Ben in that tier. And then tier under that, I think, would be Trae Young, Drew Holiday, and Kyle Lowry. I don't know if I'm missing anyone.
Trae Young. Wait, how many is that?
That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you should Trae Young, Drew Holiday, and Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Holiday is a great player. I'd probably have him there.
And then I
like that.
Yeah, I think right under that would be the tier young point guards De'Aaron Fox, Ja Morant. I think they would fall in right under that.
I think Fox could be on that trade tier. I think Fox is
I think if he sustains that level of play he was at recently, shout out Max, he knows obviously. But if he sustains that, I think he'll easily be in that tier. If not, I still just a little more out of him to put him in that tier with because I think Holiday's proven, Lowry's proven, and Trae Young's really has a huge impact on the offensive end. So I think Fox and Morant are just in that tier, right below there for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Ja, I also want to see a little more
Van Vliet for... too. I think
Van Vliet's been ridiculous this year. He wouldn't have come close in prior years, but he has been, I think Raptor has a top 5 player in the league.
I think the only thing is he might be a shooting guard. I'm not really sure what he qualifies at.
Well, in Toronto, he's still coming off the bench in Toronto, right?
I think he starts, doesn't he?
Oh, so does he start on
Lowry? I think he starts with Lowry, yeah. So they're kind of 1A, 1B.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but he's right there.
All right, so then moving on, Max asked, how much money would you pay? I have no idea. How do you pronounce his first name? Holmes.
Richwan? Richwan, yeah.
Right, how much money would you pay Richwan Holmes?
Interesting question.
Yeah.
I feel like you could get something similar to what Mitch Robinson will get, maybe just for a little less years. 3 years, 36 maybe, 39.
Yeah, that's about what I would argue he should be getting. Obviously he's not a 3-point threat or anything. He's not a great offensive threat. He's just kind of, a great defender.
Yeah.
Who can finish inside and good on pick and roll and all that good stuff. I would I think he's pretty similar to Mitch's next contract. I'm not 100% certain, but he doesn't have the injury issues that Mitch has had, right? Does he?
Yeah. No, he hasn't.
So, you know, I think Mitch's next contract is probably going to be lower if he signs it this offseason than Holmes because of those injury issues, and they're very similar players.
Right.
So, yeah, I think and like, we talked about this a little before. Like these guys are pretty one-dimensional. They're not, you know, great offensive, you know, juggernauts that you would really want to give a massive deal to. So I would sit around $10 to $15 million for him.
I think he's also somewhat old, too. It's like 27, I think.
He's 27.
Yeah, so I think like 3-4 years sounds like a good deal for him where you can lock him in for like – I think if you did 4 years, I don't think I'd want to push past $60 million, right? So like that's like $15 a year. Yeah, I think like $14 or $13 million AAV sounds good for Holmes.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem with these Holmes and these basically one-dimensional center contracts is that for some reason teams have just flooded the market with giant contracts for these guys.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Gobert is elite, but Clint Capella is on a massive deal, and he's not worth it. But Mitch is still going to say, I want that deal.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, clearly Mitch is not as good as Capella, but it's not that big of a difference where he could make the argument that he deserves as much as Capella got, but Capella doesn't deserve as much as Capella got.
Yeah, I think Capella is, like, the one guy who like should be up there. I think the main deal that kind of like messed up the market for these guys is going to be Steven Adams, because New Orleans gave him so much money and like they don't need him. Like, you have Zion there, Jackson Hayes is like a decent young guy. Paying Steve, they also traded a first round pick for Steven Adams and decided to give him like a huge contract. So I think Steven Adams kind of messed up that market for like teams. Players will benefit from it because they'll see like a guy like Adams, he's averaging maybe, I don't know what he is, but like say like 15 and 10. Mitch Robinson, he can do that if he gives like a starting role. He's gonna ask for that type of money. So I think that kind of screwed over some teams.
Adams right now is it's at 8 and 9.
Yeah, like, and he's getting like 20 25 plus, I think.
Dude's never averaged over 10 rebounds a game.
Yeah, like
let me see his contract right now. He's getting, he's in $27 million this year. He signed a 4-year, $100 million extension.
That's quite depressing.
In 2016, and then just signed a 2-year, $35 million extension this year with November with New Orleans. Okay. And that, I mean, the two year for 35 is less of a, you know, like, I mean, it's still not money that I would put in that position, but that's about what Capella is making. So I think that, you know, those guys a tier below should be getting around, you know, 10 to 15 a year.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's probably what I do for Holmes and Robinson. Holmes, I think, is a shorter-term deal than Robinson. I mean,
four years sounds good for Holmes.
Yeah, and I think Robinson, can they get 5 years on a non-max contract? I forget. They can, right? I think they can, because I think Capella got 5 years for 90.
Yeah.
So that's what I want the Knicks to, you know, if they're going to lock up Robinson, lock him up long term. And I think Holmes, you know, give him 3 years, $40 million or so, I think would be about a good deal for him.
Yeah.
So that's all the questions we got on Twitter. You said you got one more?
Yeah, one from a friend, not on Twitter. He was asking, what are the best ways to learn R? R, right, the programming language used in the sports world a lot. It's getting more popular, I feel like. I feel like I've seen, like, a lot more people on Twitter, you know, like, just putting out graphs and stuff with R. But if you want to learn R, I think, so from a sports angle, if you're interested in learning R, I think the NFL Fast R tutorial is a great place. Even to just get familiar with, like, R itself, Lee Sharp has a good, like, little article on a just like the workspace of it, how it works, like what a console is, what the code is, stuff like that. I feel like that was pretty helpful. Baseball, there's a book. It's just like an introduction, I think, to R with like baseball. It's like, it's pretty expensive, but if you can afford it, it's like $60, I think. But if you can afford it, it's just like a whole book of using R in baseball, which I think would be really helpful. And then there's also like a bunch of free textbooks online. Like, I'm working through one right now. It's like on, I think, the end of like unit 5 on it or whatever. I'll link that. But that was also really good. It shows you like different things you can do, cleaning, working with databases. And then later on, I'm pretty sure like it has like different types of modeling and stuff you could do too, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I'm still like, I took one class on like Coursera. And
yeah.
You can take them for free. Like yep. You don't have to get a certificate or anything. The certificate is meaningless. Yeah. So you can just take a class on Coursera, and it'll just basically just walk you through. I mean, it's offered by like Harvard teachers, and they'll like, you know, walk you through how to learn it. It's really, I would recommend that. And like you said, in terms of sports, I'm far from advanced in R, and I still have a lot to learn, but I've been able to learn a lot by Ben Baldwin's thing, and then just kind of just plugging in different things from different websites. Yeah. And, you know, making my own spreadsheets and then trying to figure that out, because genuinely just Googling like how to do this in R, and usually something will pop up and it makes it, and I'll be able to, you know, just, it's just like, you know, slow, but yeah, I think that I would highly recommend the Baldwin thing. I think that was the best thing, just to it looks like a different language when you first start, but you eventually, the more you do it, you'll just get the hang of it, and it'll just make a lot more sense. But yeah, I think that if you want to get more advanced, I'm gonna be studying this kind of stuff in college, so like that. But we're talking about like for a casual person, it's just, I think, yeah, textbooks, Coursera. Coursera goes into some pretty advanced courses if you want. So I think that I would recommend that. Mm. But yeah, I think that if you are just kind of looking to do it for fun, I think you genuinely just need the Ben Baldwin thing, and then just to kind of get the hang of when you're plotting something, what it's actually saying. And once you do that, I think that it makes it so much easier.
Yeah, I think especially with like R in general, I think you realize there's like a pattern you follow with like different sports and like analyzing data. There's like a clear pattern where you can like, all right, I found a data source, let me export it into a spreadsheet, you know, convert it to a CSV or something, read that CSV into R. I can summarize a couple things, maybe mutate if I want to create a new stat based on something they have. And then, all right, maybe I'll join this with like some like roster data or like colors, you know, to help it make it look good. And then I'll graph it. I think that's like kind of like the main process. I follow that a lot. And I think that'll help anyone who wants to get into it. Just like also repetition. I know like it sounds kind of lame, but the more you do it, the more you're like, you know, searching up different packages, which is like in R. I think that'll help a lot. And
I made a spreadsheet of, not a spreadsheet, I made a R graph of all the colleges I applied to based on acceptance rate and distance from home. And just it's really fun, just like I remember when I first I downloaded Jackson gave me a giant spreadsheet file that I think he got from Baseball Savant, just literally every game event in baseball over the last like 5 years. And like I remember like clicking on a button and I didn't realize it was there, and I was like, Dad, there's 100 more stats on this. It's just the nerdiest thing I've ever said, but it's really cool. Like, I don't care. Yeah. Like, it was really cool. It's a giant moment in my life.
Yeah, like, I think it's a lot easier than Google Sheets, too. I like a lot of people use, like, Google Sheets, right? It's like manual, or like Excel. Use, like, manually input, or like use, like, VLOOKUP and stuff, so, like, import data. I think, like, R is easier. You can just, like, pick a stat, you know, like, all right, I want
R
this.
R is way easier. Yeah. R is a very good, like, coding language where, like, there's so much stuff. Like I'm taking like AP CompSci right now, and it's like there's so much stuff where I'm like, this should be 10 times easier in R. Like I could like push like 3 buttons and it would be done. Like why are we doing this?
It's pretty intuitive too. I like it a lot. And I think like if you want to get into like data science as a whole, which is like something, you know, like we both want to do, obviously, learning R, and then I think learning SQL or SQL.
What was the next one you said?
SQL. It's another programming language. I know, like, I remember talking to someone. He, like, works for the Yankees in their analytics department. He was saying, like, learning, like, one of R or Python and then learning SQL, like, goes a long way. Especially because I think, like, it's obviously, like, a sports analytics podcast. So, you know, I'm assuming people here might want to go in like sports. So like, learning those two would be good.
Yep. All right. This went very long. I didn't realize.
We had a lot of questions this time.
Yeah.
Good questions too.
Very good questions, especially the woodchuck question. If next time you guys should really step up your game and get more woodchuck questions out there. All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. We will be back next Tuesday. Unfortunately, we cannot record on Monday, but we will be back next Tuesday. And yeah, we will see you then. Bye.